Now that we're into the new year, a lot of us start feeling that familiar pressure. Everywhere you look, on social media, in magazines, or even around the dinner table, people are talking about what they want to leave behind and how they're going to become a new, healthier version of themselves this year. But now that we've entered February, perhaps you set a couple health goals in January, and maybe some of them felt great, or maybe you haven't been able to follow through in the way that you hoped. And now that quiet guilt starts creeping in, and part of you might even feel like giving up altogether. If any of that feels familiar, take a deep breath with me. Drop your shoulders. You're in exactly the right place. Before we get to today's guest, I wanted to share that in this episode and in the ones to come, you'll be hearing a little more from me. I love talking with our guests, and I want to help synthesize what we're learning into meaningful takeaways for your nutrition, health, and everyday lives. This means you'll notice me popping in with reflections here and there. It also means we get to broaden our conversations, bring in guests who offer fresh perspectives and different ideas. And don't worry, I'll be right here to connect it all back to the nutrition side of things. So to start us off, I am joined by psychotherapist Megan Refuse to talk about how to set gentle, realistic goals that actually support your physical and mental well-being. For many people, goal setting actually doesn't feel energizing. It feels kind of heavy. This conversation with ourselves often turns into what we take away, rather than building something sustainable and joyful. This often comes from setting goals that are A, unrealistic, or B, deprivation, rather than adding things in. Some examples are, I'm going to work out 5 days a week at 6 a.m., or I'm going to stop eating all carbs. But if you set those more rigid goals, those plans inevitably collide with real life. And I hear all the time from my clients, oh, I know what to do, I just need to find the motivation. And I tell them over and over that motivation is not a good friend to us. Motivation waxes and wanes, it comes and goes all day, every day. So if you are waiting for motivation to really make you change or do the things you want to do, that day might never come. When my clients aren't able to achieve their goals, it's often because the goal wasn't developed correctly rather than the fact that they're not motivated or they're not trying their best. They truly are, but a lot of times it's actually the goal that is not correct, not you or your motivation. All of that is to say, if you've ever felt frustrated by goal setting or guilty for falling off, this conversation will help you rethink health in a way that's kinder, more grounded, and actually achievable. There are ways to take real steps forward and make the changes you want in your life. So, to dig deeper, I wanted to start with Megan's perspective on how perfectionism shows up in these moments and why those new year, new me goals aren't always what they're cracked up to be. Welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited, Megan. For listeners who may be meeting you for the first time, I'd love to hear more about the work that you do and what inspired your approach to helping people create meaningful change.
Thank you so much for having me today. I help people create change while they're living their real life, not the curated version that we typically see online. Throughout my journey as a therapist, I've been practicing for over a decade. And I'm also the founder and CEO of Shift Collab, which is Canada's leading virtual mental health therapy company. And what really has stuck with me over this journey in the mental health space has been that when people try to set goals that don't align with their everyday life, they tend to have a hard time sticking with them. They get into the shame spiral and they fall off. I'm also a mom. I have 2 little kids under 4. This topic is so relevant for me because I'll be the first to admit that when I set my own personal health and fitness goals, I tend to prescribe to the all or nothing thinking. I tend to be perfectionistic. And as I've been thinking about our conversation today, I'm entering it with a reminder that I need to practice this too. If you're listening and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm starting from like the bottom, I just want you to be kind to yourself. This is really hard. I struggle with it as well. I often describe myself as being an ADHDer, and it's really been a big part of my identity. I've been diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. I was diagnosed, like most women, in my 20s. And a lot of women go undiagnosed, whether we're told that we're daydreamers or we're anxious or it's perfectionism. And for me, having the label of ADHD allowed me to start recognizing why I was struggling in certain areas of my life. Apart from all of those limitations, it also can be a superpower. I'm creative. I am open to taking risks. I love trying new things. That works really well in health and fitness. So for those of you who may be living with ADHD, I want you to just normalize that it is a part of you. It does not define you, but you have to work with your ADHD in a way that acknowledges the capacity that it can take from you or give to you and work your health and fitness goals around that.
Exactly. I mean, I'm a dietitian. I do not eat perfectly, right? I help people with behavior change, but I'm also working on my own behavior change. You have a quote that I want to read back to you because it's awesome. Most goals don't fail because we lack information, but because our lived experience isn't taken into account. So I want to hear more about how you develop that philosophy.
Yeah. So let's be honest, we rarely fail because we don't know what to do. Most of us are, especially those of us who are ambitious, are setting goals that feel meaningful, that we know the steps, that we understand the SMART goals. We often fail because the plan that we made didn't include the reality of our life. So I want to give you an example. We see this so often with these productivity gurus who tell you if you just get up at 5 a.m. and do your morning pages and get your 7-minute stretch in and work out and have a protein breakfast, you will have the perfect life. And while some of these strategies are actually really effective, the reality is there was no conversation about, like, how are the kids getting to school? And what happens if your kid is up sick at night? And, you know, who is making the breakfast? And what I started to realize is I had to build my goals and my productivity planning around my own life. And so now I tell clients, when we get information from people who are telling us the perfect plan, I want you to pay attention to some of those strategies that work really well for you or that you're honestly interested in trying out. But I also want you to think about, what are my responsibilities? What do I have on my plate? How's my mental health? Am I a caregiver right now? And then I want you to use that to shape your goal setting. It's really easy to fall into that compare and despair. When you're setting your goals, think through what your own reality looks like. Make a decision based on your capacity and what success would actually mean to you, and then use that to drive your plan.
I get the feeling that you, like me, are obsessed with personalized care.
For those of us who tend to be more perfectionistic, it's really important to acknowledge, am I setting unreasonably high expectations for myself when I'm making these goals? There's a difference between having high standards for ourselves, but having unreasonably high standards and feeling like you have to perform at a level that just isn't sustainable, that's where we fall into that perfectionism space. Studies consistently show that people with these high self-imposed expectations are actually at higher risk of unhealthy eating patterns around food. They're also at risk around developing unhealthy exercise patterns. And health and the food and nutrition space actually becomes a prime place for perfectionism to land.
Our listeners are really high-achieving, motivated folks. And so setting goals feels really natural to them, like you're mentioning. People want to track and achieve. Why do you think that shows up so strongly, specifically in health and nutrition goals?
So when we're feeling a sense of a loss of control, for example, we have really demanding careers. Maybe we're trying to navigate being parents or caring for family members or navigate chronic illness. What tends to happen is we want to find areas of control in our lives. Health and fitness tends to be that area where it's so measurable that we can set ourselves up for unrealistic high standards. most of us, I'm assuming here, have been in the situation where we think, okay, I'm going to exercise 7 days a week. I am going to track all my calories. I am going to sleep 8 hours a night. I'm going to drink 8 glasses of water a day. What can happen then is we can fall into self-criticism or a shame spiral. We think, oh my gosh, I didn't get all my cups of water in. And so I've fallen off my plan. I failed today. I'm not good enough. And so this measurability can invite this like sense of constant evaluation. Perfectionism can be really mean. It often will tell us if we're not good enough, if we're not following the plan, if we make a mistake, then we are a failure. It's not that the plan has failed, it's that we are a failure.
I am famous for setting what I call unsexy goals, very boring goals. I have people put on their gym clothes and drive to the gym and don't go in. I have people get on a stationary bike for 2 minutes. People really don't like that. But once they give it a try and they start to finally gain some traction, it can be a really positive cycle.
So in the therapy room, I've been known to say, look, the first step is just putting on your shoes. The next step is deciding that you are going to go for a walk around the block for 5 minutes. But what we know about behavioral activation, which is the premise that it forces your body to act before your brain catches up. Typically, our motivation or willpower will follow that behavior activation. So put on the shoes, get outside, and after 5 minutes, decide if you want to stop. If you want to stop, fine. There's no shame in listening to your body. But most of us, after we're out and walking for 5 minutes, we're like, I'm not stopping. I feel good now. The endorphins are flowing. I want to keep going. And so I am so big on these unsexy goals because this is how little by little we are enacting habits that will drive change.
Yeah. I do think there's just something to the work that you and I do with these small baby steps. People don't love them because they're not exciting, but they really make a difference. This episode is brought to you by Orgain. Juggling life's demands while trying to stay mindful about what you eat deserves some kind of medal. And that's where Orgain's organic protein powder plus metabolism blend comes in. Each serving gives you 21 grams of complete plant-based protein with all 9 essential amino acids, plus a good source of fiber to help you feel satisfied. It also includes chromium, a key mineral that supports metabolic health and helps your body use carbohydrates more efficiently. It's made with just 1 gram of sugar and a thoughtful blend of organic ingredients like green coffee bean extract. You can find it at orgain.com. I just love what Megan and I have explored so far. Those shame spirals can feel so intense, and when you're in them, getting back on track can feel like a million miles away. That's why I also embrace her micro-step approach in my own practice. These goals seem tiny, but actually they aren't. Progress is made up of small moments, the moments where we don't let past setbacks define us and instead choose to keep going with a little more self-compassion. So, with this topic in mind, I thought it would be a perfect moment for Ask Dr. Ginger, a segment where I offer some insight into those commonly asked questions when it comes to nutrition. Given our conversation, today's question is, okay, I've fallen off my nutrition goal of meal prepping for the week every Sunday. What do I do now? Well, perhaps a full meal prep was too much. Maybe that doesn't leave time for the rest or connection you need on the weekends. There are so many ways to adjust this really great goal. I often have my clients prep on Mondays rather than on the weekend, for example. Sometimes also, we need to pare down the meal prep goal. Maybe you could mix up a banana bread or muffins recipe, and that's a win. And then maybe while it's baking, you hard-boil some eggs, chop your veggies for the week, and if you have time, you whip up a hearty salad to have for lunch. The first step to any of this is having a plan based on your schedule. The second is being sure to shop to that plan so you have the foods in the house. And the third is figuring out what type of prep is most realistic and helpful for you and your family. So there we have it, The micro steps are in place, but how do you know if you're ready to actually use them? Megan shares something that I love to hear, the idea of asking whether you're in the right season of life to even take on certain goals. Tell me about activation, season-appropriate goals, and what to do if you're never, like, ready or it's not ever the perfect right time.
Such a good question. Psychologically, when we're setting goals, we need to take an honest look at our capacity. There's often the quote, there's a reason in a season. A beneficial sacrifice are these intentional choices that you are making day in and day out to support your goal. They cost you something. So these choices are costing me something, whether it's time, energy, or money. And these choices pay me back positively. Habit science is really clear, really well researched. And a simple boundary or environmental cue can help make your goal easier to choose. So for example, let me give you an example of my own beneficial sacrifice. So I typically walk my kids to school in the morning. I really love that time with them. And in order to go to personal training, I recognize that I am going to have to go in the morning. I bail on my commitments. If it's after 6 p.m., I will make excuses and cancel. So I have done two things to make sure that I am committing to my goal, which is I ask my husband, or if you don't have a spouse or whatever your life situation is, ask someone else to support you in this. But I ask my husband to walk the kids to school. I'm bummed, but that is the only way I can make it to my personal training. I also told my personal trainer, hey, I'm an ADHDer. I have a really busy life. I struggle with commitment and consistency. We need to have some kind of boundary or expectation or punishment in a positive way. So this is a beneficial sacrifice for me. If I am late or try to cancel on you, here is what I need you to do. So I taught my personal trainer how to best understand me, how to appreciate me at my worst, because I will text him and say, oh, I'm not feeling well. I'm really tired. I need him to say, if you don't come today, I am going to charge you $150. And so I need some kind of motivation outside of myself that will hold me accountable. And I need my support system around me to support my goal. These sacrifices actually work because they're chosen. I personally chose what these sacrifices will be.
I find also that it's helpful when there's like something on the table, and it can be small stuff, and those can be supporters. There's good research that having like an accountability, like, hey, your friend's at the gym, you have a neighbor that you walk with, like having that person, we are more accountable to them than ourselves. Or one thing that's worked so well for me is like the cancellation fee at Orange Theory or F45 that gets me every time. I'm not gonna do the cancellation fee. But I've talked to other people that are like, oh, I don't care about that. So you have to figure out what it means for you and grab those little, I call them anchors, that are gonna keep you moving forward. I have two really important points I want to get to. We talked about support and what works for us and how to set that up. What do you suggest if somebody has a non-supportive person in their life, somebody that maybe even working against them?
I want to take a step back and say, first, when we're trying to build a new habit or change a pattern, we need a support team. All of us do. The other thing to note that I've seen is that there's an expectation that one person can be that support in all of the ways. I want us to normalize that there's multiple people in our lives who can play different roles of support, and that's often a better way to set up your support team. So you might have one person who keeps you accountable with structure. Hey, did you eat today? You might have another person who's grounding you with emotional safety. Hey, I've noticed you've been really struggling, or you're saying you're just not sleeping well. What's up? Someone else might be your reality check. Hey, Megan, you haven't been to the gym all week. What's going on? You need to come back. And someone else might just be someone that you just kind of live life with, or they move barriers out of your way. Not everyone will play the same role. So I don't want that like hard, like, hey, you never went to the gym. You didn't show up, from my husband. I want that from my best friend who I can have those kind of conversations with and I won't feel judged or get defensive. So not everyone will play the same role. And what matters is that you are honest with the people that you need support from about the kind of support you need. If someone in your life isn't supportive, often it can feel quite jarring. I want you to start noticing the impact of their unsupportive behavior versus judging their intent. So some people get really uncomfortable when other people around them are growing. It can bring up their own insecurities. It can make them feel unworthy. It can drive their own sense of failure. Your job is never to convince them that you are worthy of your goal or you are worthy of support. Your job is to protect your space that you need to succeed in your goal. So that might mean that you turn to other people for aspects of support that you need. It might mean that you have boundaries. Maybe you just don't talk to that person about your goal because you know that they're not going to be able to support you. It's really hard if that person lives in your house or you're doing life with that person. But in reality, our goals are our personal goals, and it is our responsibility. Instead of convincing someone else to support us, it's our responsibility to go out and find that support that we need.
I have one final question for anyone, and there's probably a lot of people, including myself, who's feeling really inspired to set gentle, realistic health or nutrition goals for 2026. What is one message that you most want them to carry forward and never forget?
You start making meaningful change by remembering that being human isn't a disruption to your goals. It is part of the environment that your goals live in. And when something unexpected happens, because it will, there are going to be barriers to success. Instead of going straight to, I messed up, or I'm not good enough, or see, I can't do it anyway, I want you to pause and I want you to name what's actually going on. My kid was sick today. I had a brutal work day and I am exhausted. I needed connection more than I needed structure tonight. And when you name the truth, you allow yourself to really reframe that shame spiral before it even starts. It's really easy to negate that the simple act of being kind to ourselves is actually the fuel for driving our habits that will stick. And that feels so uncomfortable for so many of us who are used to self-punishment. But what I want you to do is just simply ask yourself, what's the next gentle step? So this is your homework, is just be a little nicer to yourself and watch how it can reshape your success in hitting all those goals that you want to hit.
Thank you, Megan. If people start by asking themselves those three questions that you framed and move into gentle, realistic goal setting for 2026 in a way that's right for this season in their life, I think there's going to be a lot more success than the usual start really hard and fall off immediately. So thank you for all that great advice.
Thank you so much. There's no all or nothing welcome in 2026. It is our year of self-compassion and kindness. And that is what we're anchoring on.
I love it. I'm going to join you in that. As we wrap up today's conversation, I hope you're walking away with a little more kindness and grace towards yourself. I promise you, your self-worth has nothing to do with how perfectly you follow a plan. It's got to be the right plan, and it also has to be the right time. My reminder to you is that change is not linear. There will be slips, pauses, and setbacks. None of that means you've failed. The real change actually comes from your ability to keep moving forward and pivot when needed. Flexibility and perseverance can take you much further than motivation. Thank you so much for spending this time with us today. I hope this conversation helps you feel grounded and ready for the rest of the year. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.